Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I rise for the fourth consecutive year to respond to another budget constructed by the United Workers' Party government. Madam Speaker, with very few exceptions, the contributions made by members opposite are essentially attacks on the opposition in general and the leader of the opposition in particular. I noted with interest in recent times, Madam Speaker, and up to yesterday, my good friend, the Minister for Communications and Works, on a new crusade, taking on the opposition. But let me indicate to the Minister, the member for Kasi Southeast, do not attempt to take on the opposition. You do not have the political hardware to do so. Instead, I shall invite you to a peaceful competition in the Labrie constituency to fix my road for me, Honorable Minister. You must not sound like you are a political warmonger. If it was a member of the opposition, maybe you would have been considered arrogant, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I expect from time to time, or generally, for there to be disagreements and controversies, unresolved controversies among politicians. But if one should assess the notes of our deliberations in this Honorable House, they should find a survey of contending ideas and arguments, not make-weep, Madam Speaker. But no, the government with negative growth in the economy, with unemployment moving from 13.6% to 25%, can stay across the room and shout to the opposition maladministration. In a few moments, Madam Speaker, I will show how this argument is vulnerable to the facts surrounding the performance of the former Labour government. But at this point, Madam Speaker, I would like to give careful and sensible treatment to an argument advanced by the Minister for Communications and Works yesterday during the course of his presentation. Madam Speaker, yesterday I watched the Honorable Minister getting all hot and sweaty over the proposed Iwanura Airport development. I want the Minister to appreciate fully, Madam Speaker, that if there's one individual in this Honorable House who's more passionate about Iwanura, it is the Honorable Member for Labrie, Madam Speaker. At the tender age of 17, I started working at Iwanura International Airport. I worked in Ottawa, sometimes under conditions that we had to remove our shirts, Madam Speaker, and open the door to try to get some ventilation. It was almost like a dump. So, Madam Speaker, I would be the last individual in this Honorable House to suggest to this Honorable House, or to suggest to the public, that we should not undertake some work at the Iwanura International Airport. But, Madam Speaker, I had the good fortune to educate myself in air transport economics and finance, airport planning, and air transport forecasting. So I am quite conversant with the issues surrounding the Iwanura Airport development. And I want this Honorable House to know, Madam Speaker, that I did my own analysis of the situation, including doing a forecast with historical data up to last year, 2009, for both traffic movement and passenger movement, Madam Speaker. And my analysis suggests, even if we move to the rationalization of the airport infrastructure in this country, that it does not justify that scale of investment. So, Madam Speaker, I am suggesting to the Honorable Prime Minister that he should exercise an abundance of caution moving forward with the project. He should consult the people and, of course, get experts on both sides to look at this development critically. Because this development will have some serious economic and financial implications for our St. Lucia. And I was very surprised to hear the minister indicating yesterday that we're in deep financial trouble, but in the same breath, suggesting a scale of investment of almost $500 million. The minister also criticized the opposition for its principal position on the Taiwanese affair, calling upon the opposition to adjust itself to the modus operandi of the Taiwanese, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, an outstanding American once said, "A people who values its privileges above its principles soon loses both." And I would like to, of course, consult the Holy Bible, Madam Speaker. And when such things happen in a nation, is there a word? And of course there is a word, Madam Speaker. And in the book of Proverbs 28, verse 2, it says, "When there is moral rot within a nation, its government topples easily. But with wise and knowledgeable leaders, there is stability." Unquote, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., during one of his sermons in the Baptist Church, noted that modern psychology has a word that is probably used more often than any other word, and it is the word maladjusted. And he went on to say that there are some things in our society and some things in our world that he was proud to be maladjusted to. He said he never intended to adjust himself to racial segregation and discrimination. He said he never intended to adjust himself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few, leaving millions of God's children smothering an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society. Like the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., I do not intend to adjust myself to this Taiwanese nonsense in this country. Madam Speaker, having said so, I would like to resume normal navigation. It is budget time again, Madam Speaker, but the burning question is, what has this government achieved after more than 3 years in office? All the maladministration and shouting across the room. This government has again promised much, but what is the government record of performance? Madam Speaker, in the campaign leading up to the 2006 general election, the UWP made some very serious and attractive promises to the people of this country. They peddled a plan to the electorate that promised, among other things, Madam Speaker, to reduce government expenditure by $300 million, to reduce the price of basic food items and commodities, to reduce fuel prices, to create 7,000 new jobs, to reduce crime. This is the first consecutive budget which has been presented by this current government, and to date, each budget presented collides with its continuing failure to deliver on the promises made. This is the absolute antithesis, Madam Speaker, of what obtained during the SLP administration, which in 1997, through its contract of faith, entered into a new covenant with the people of this country. Consequently, Madam Speaker, the Labour government utilized the budget as a strategic instrument of development and change that was serious, objective, and focused. Dr. Kenny Anthony and his competent crew did not bluff the people of St. Lucia with grandiose projects like tunnels and new airports and seaports. The men and women of the Labour government served this country with honesty, Madam Speaker, diligence, discipline, and decorum. And they successfully moved St. Lucia from recovery to expansion during the period 1997 to 2006. And I pulled out some information of a few budgets which I'd like to share with this Honorable House, Madam Speaker. on November 7, 1997, 6 months after the May 23rd election, it became necessary for the new government to present a supplementary budget, in which the new Prime Minister and Minister of Finance sought to rearrange the national priorities to suit the philosophical outlook of the Labour Party and to fulfill its promises as contained in the contract of faith. The theme of this first budgetary statement was to lay the foundation to stabilize the economy and redefine its priorities. And it was for a total of 124.9 million for a 6 month period. On April 21st, 1998, Madam Speaker, having succeeded in the initial task of stabilizing the economy and redefining the government's development priorities, Dr. Anthony presented his second budget address, 1998-1999, which was really the first to cover a complete financial year under the theme, stimulating and reorienting the economy towards sustained growth. That budget was for $633.9 million, Madam Speaker. Reform, recovery, modernization, and consolidation was the theme for the next one. And let's move on, Madam Speaker, to institutional reform, economic consolidation, and social recovery. And that year, for $744.4 million, it moved to strengthening, modernizing, and repositioning the economy, inspiring and sustaining development in a changing world, enhancing investment, revitalizing agriculture, and stimulating recovery, advancing infrastructural development and economic recovery in an uncertain world. It moved on to strengthening, modernizing, and repositioning the economy. Then it moved on, Madam Speaker, to consolidating gains, developing a world-class destination, and enhancing human resource capacity. During that period, Madam Speaker, the people philosophy was apparent. The socio-economic logic was sound and the programs were practical and realistic. Despite global challenges, Madam Speaker, like new international trade rules and the September 11th terrorist attack on the United States of America, from as early as 6 months after September 11th, Prime Minister Anthony was able to report the very first signs of economic recovery, a modest growth rate of 0.5% for 2001. A year later, Madam Speaker, the economy was responding positively to the government's policies and rebounded well with a 3.1% growth rate. Investors were expressing more confidence. The tourism and manufacturing sectors were picking up. There was increased activity within the agricultural sector, and infrastructural products were proceeding at a rapid pace. This was followed in 2003 with a growth rate of 4%, Madam Speaker, as signs of economic recovery became even more evident, and infrastructural developments in the country increased. The tourism sector had by then replaced the agricultural sector as the lead economic sector. Investor confidence was high, with more local and foreign investments coming on stream. Over $1 billion worth of investment had been committed to the tourism sector alone, Madam Speaker. St. Lucia had become a world-class destination, and all sectors of the economy were reporting progress, including the agricultural sector, which was adversely affected by climate change and a more active hurricane season. Regional and international financial institutions also praised the Kenyan government for its management of the best performing economy among the independent nations of the OECD. Dr. Anthony's 2006-2007 budget of April 25, 2006 was his last before the 2006 general election, but it was probably, Madam Speaker, the best. A record growth rate of 5.4% was reported, and St. Lucia was again commended by international financial institutions for its management of the economy generally and for controlling the island's debt, Madam Speaker. The $1.1 billion budget, which had as its theme from recovery to expansion, was welcomed by all as it reported progress in all but one sector, and proposed no additional taxes, Madam Speaker. It also projected growth rate of 6.6% for that year and aimed to continue consolidating the gains of the past 8 years, while seeking to ensure that the state's finances supported sufficiently St. Lucia and the region's hosting of Cricket World Cup 2007 without negatively affecting other sectors, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, among the priorities of the Kenyans and the administration were job creation, poverty alleviation, reduction of inequality, and the overall growth of the country's wealth. And it delivered on all of those areas. After its first 3 years in office, just like this government taking over, after the Labour government was in office for 3 years, the question is, what was the report card of the St. Lucia Labour Party government? In this regard, Madam Speaker, I would like to quote from celebrating 50 years of struggle for bread, justice and freedom for all St. Lucians. Madam Speaker, that's not what you taught me when you're the principal of the secondary school. Madam Speaker, I would like to quote celebrating 50 years of struggle for bread, justice and freedom for all St. Lucians. In 3 short years, your Labour government has, and I quote, created and nurtured the development of hundreds of small businesses and directed millions of dollars worth of contract work, given St. Lucia multi-story car park, the catering for the dramatic increase in the number of vehicles bought by working St. Lucians, created permanent and part-time jobs for thousands of St. Lucians, thus reducing unemployment from 22% to 16%. IMF confirmed in the first 3 years. Taken light and water to several new communities, assisting thousands of households with electricity and setting down 3,000 new street lamps. Constructed footpaths, steps and other public amenities in dozens of communities across St. Lucia. Improved social and welfare benefits to the seniors, the indigent and the less fortunate. Constructed a $46 million prison for the protection of law-abiding citizens in this country. Revolutionized education in St. Lucia with the construction and expansion of several schools, upgrade of amenities, enhanced training of teachers, and an overhaul of the curriculum. Constructed a $46 million fisheries complex on upgraded other fish landing and processing facilities around the island. Constructed a goods distribution free zone. Commenced construction of the National Stadium, which had been promised for 20 years. Broken ground on what will be the region's most technological advanced test cricket facility. Abolished the 5% tax on telephone calls. Removed the charge imposed on persons visiting health centers. Return ownership of Pigeon Island to the people of St. Lucia. Commence an island-wide house repair program for seniors. Establish the Bell Fund and Poverty Reduction Fund to attract and reduce poverty in St. Lucia. Abolish the tax on tips received by hotel workers. Created a new accident and emergency unit at Victoria Hospital. Conducted extensive drainage work on the Catharines River, transforming Masha in the process. Removed duties on consumption taxes on taxes. Assisted the banana industry by paying off the $46 million debt incurred by the SLBGA. Removing all duties on consumption taxes on inputs. Subsidizing by $3 million the purchase of boxes for farmers. Removing duty and consumption taxes on vehicles purchased by banana farmers. Brought tourism to the people by the introduction of a heritage tourism program, which is the envy of the region. Sold shares in NCB to the people of St. Lucia, resulting in the bank recording its highest profit ever. Established new housing estates in both Bosaju Union and Black Bay. Enacted the most wide-ranging legislation in the Eastern Caribbean, including such vital laws as minimum wage legislation, legislation to outlaw discrimination against women, and legislation to compel employers to recognize trade unions. Cleaned up and commenced the beautification of St. Lucia through the establishment of the NCA, constructed two daycare and two human resource development centers, introduced PROUD, a program to regularize ownership of title to persons who are spotted on government land, constructed a new communications and work complex, taken steps to provide a clubhouse and other suitable recreational facilities for government workers, as promised, abolish entertainment tax and the requirement for tax exit certificates by St. Lucia. Put forth and secured the reduction of domestic and international telephone calls. Introduced several other initiatives to improve the standard of living and the quality of life of St. Lucia. Unquote. Madam Speaker, right, we are still voted out. You know why, Madam Speaker? You know why, Madam Speaker, the Labour Party accomplished all of that, Madam Speaker, in that 3 years? In 3 short years, we had our challenges too. We made no excuses. We was successful because ministerial competence resided in the government.
No corruption.
No corruption. The Labour Party administration understood very clearly that the vocation of politicians ought to be to represent, to channel, to lead the aspirations of the electorate, these aspirations not on every issue, but in essential direction. The Labour Party never claimed to have solved every problem. It never said it delivered on every single issue, but there was a clear direction. There was a clear purpose. And all what the Labour Party did actually went down to the very core of the Labour Party, its philosophy, its body of principles, bread, justice, and freedom. But Madam Speaker, despite the disparaging remarks of some members opposite me, education is vital in effectively running the affairs of a country. Education is very important. I will be the last one to stand on this side of the house and to belittle anybody on the other side because of their education. This is not my style. But I want to recognize in this honorable house, and I want to go on record as saying that the days when people just used to enter politics and parade, the world has changed. We cannot embrace all myths in the face of current realities. That somebody with a degree is not automatically a politician. But today we need politicians who are skilled to undertake the business of state, Madam Speaker. So, Madam Speaker, I wish to say it is because of education. The USSR mounted from the status of a poor, underdeveloped country to developed country and superpower, mainly on the wings of education. Japan owes its phenomenal growth as an industrial capital and world power to education, Madam Speaker. Notwithstanding the achievements of the government, different programs taking effect, improving the lives of the people of this country, poor people and the social fabric, which is responsible for the survival, continued to be vulnerable. And therefore, if we are to move to a higher plane of development, Madam Speaker, the overriding challenges to employment generation and reduction in poverty. After 3 years, this UWP government has borrowed almost $1 billion. What have they done? What have they done? Nothing significant, Madam Speaker. My colleagues in the deliberations have clearly established that the magnitude of this government's problems are homegrown, Madam Speaker. And at this juncture, I shall do a capital budget analysis. For 2007 to 2008, right across to 2010 and 2011, four budgets into its term of office, the UWP government capital program continues to be a list of bluffs, grandiose plans and unfulfilled promises. From 2007 to 2010, Madam Speaker, the government's capital budget has declined by 33.85%, from 552.75 million in 2007-2008 to 366.63 million in 2010-2011. The budgeted amount in the estimates represents 33.1% of the full capital project's cost of 1.11 billion. Following are some selected capital projects by ministry and the implication record, because time and strict relevancy will not permit me to articulate all of them. In the public service, public sector efficiency initiative costing $1.35 million has been in the estimate since 2007. 4 years, but as of March 31st, 2010, was only 14.57% implemented. E-government project costing $6.53 million has been in the estimates from 2008, 3 years, but as of March 31st, 2010, was only 12.73% implemented. Home Affairs, replacement of fire appliances costing $4.97 million was in the 2009 estimate at $3.9 million. But as at March 31st, 2010, was 0% implemented. Closed circuit security system for Bodile Correctional Facility was in the estimate from 2007 to 2009-2010, costing from $1.03 million to $1.63 million, but has suddenly disappeared from the 2010-2011 estimates without implementation. Closed circuit security system for the police costing $5.09 million has been in the estimate from 2008, from $4.57 million to $5.09 million, but was 0% implemented at March 31st, 2010. Agriculture, all the capital heads have suddenly been changed, maybe to confuse people and perpetuate the myth that the minister is working. And the Taiwanese exhibition of Union Agricultural Station represents progress in agriculture. Nonetheless, we were able to pick up the following despite the clever aliases, Madam Speaker. Agricultural Marketing Agency costing $5.7 million has been in the estimate from 2007, from $2.1 million to $5.7 million, but as at March 31st, 2010, was less than 1% implemented. And Madam Speaker, I can go on and on. On and on, Madam Speaker, to articulate projects that were spoken about from 2007 but has not been implemented. We ought to be realistic in this Honorable House, Madam Speaker. One do not expect the government to implement everything in a budget. I mean, there are circumstances that could impact a government. But the government have not demonstrated that it's serious about the business of state, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, this decline is partly due to the government's decision to sever ties with mainland China, forfeiting in 2007-2008, Madam Speaker, $104 million in capital budget support. Included in this grant from the People's Republic of China were the following projects, and it was not in our budget, Madam Speaker, it was in a budget that was prepared and presented by this government. Establishment of ICT Park, $26.7 million. They were supposed to have created parks in Labri, Mabuya Valley, Meku, Demri, Canary's Ancillary. But during that very same budget, they kick out mainland China. And so, that particular plan to create the 7,000 new jobs for young people in this country did not materialize. And can you imagine if 7,000 new jobs were created, you know what that has caused in the economy of this country, Madam Speaker? Crime prevention, $5 million. Are we surprised then that we are in the habit of lawlessness, Madam Speaker? And you know, it was very interesting to sit in this honorable house and listen to the member for Groseillers in government answered, Madam Speaker. And this is what he said about crime. I quote from page 48. Madam Speaker, we will see a resultant reduction in the crime rate in this country. We will not sit idly by and make excuses if crime continues to grow in this country. We have a responsibility. We have a mandate given to us by the people. And by the way, Madam Speaker, crime was one of the platforms on which we campaigned. We made a pledge to the people of St. Lucia to reduce crime and to ensure that in the coming years there'll be a reduction in the statistics provided by the National Crime Commission. Unquote. Unquote. Unquote, Madam Speaker. I am saying that the minister, the government, has been impotent in the resolution of the crime problem in this country. The minister and the government is just languishing in lukewarm seas of comfortable mediocrity, Madam Speaker, while delinquency and crime continue to loose, continues its decimating march across the moral and social fabric of our country. Mr. Prime Minister, rearrange your national priorities. Sports facilities, 8 million from the Chinese grant proposed in 2007, 8 million for sports facilities. Had that $104 million been introduced in the economy, Madam Speaker, maybe the playing field at Olibo that the former Labour Party government started and that was almost completed, all that was missing to complete the playing field was the resurfacing of the playing field. I'll come to you. But no, we chase the money. What's on mental facility? $6.2 million. A long time ago, that facility could have been completed. And one ambassador came from Taiwan, and the first words that came from his mouth was that the hospital was too big. Then again, interfering in our domestic affairs, excess capacity could have been used to attract money from overseas. There are persons in the United States of America under pressure who want to relax, who want to get well, and we could have generated revenue from that. But we had a myopic minister. But you know, Madam Speaker, you know, from the time the ambassador from Taiwan came here, I always knew that was no respect for the people of this country. We all know, Madam Speaker, that, you know, in our culture, that name is not a good word. It's not a good word. Huh? Madam Speaker, nous tous savons. Nous savons que tu as pas un bon mot en langage nous. Et pour nous tibisser ça là, en famille, maman, il est cool. Ça pour mettre la rose et puis tout partout. Bon, laisse-tu maman là pour m'en faire dire, mot ça. Ou pas ça bâtir, papa. Vous savez. Repairs to schools, Madam Speaker. Repairs to schools. $3.3 million. And so far, there are many schools needing attention in my constituency, like the Ogier Combined School. Only recently, Madam Speaker, I had to repair 4 classrooms at the Ogier Combined School through allocation and private sector assistance. But Madam Speaker, I can go on and on itemizing the various projects that were lost because of the government's decision to break diplomatic relations with mainland China in favor of Taiwan.
Madam Speaker, a point of order, the government of St. Lucia never broke diplomatic relations with China.
China left.
Order, order. Order, order. Let's watch our parliamentary language, please. Please.
I will continue, Madam Speaker, if you permit me to. Good. And Mr. Prime Minister and others, do not disturb me. I have the floor. Madam Speaker, 104 million dollars on average could have been injected into the local economy over the past 3 years if mainland China was still in Fentosha. And you see the unacceptable growth rate in our economy? It would not have been, irrespective of global shocks. So that problem with capital expenditure being under pressure, in decline, that was actually homegrown. The government created that problem. And where is Taiwan? Is Taiwan first coming in all of this? In 2008, in terms of grants, 29 million from Taiwan. In 2009, approximately 46 million, and has declined in this budget to 20 million in grants. But everybody, Taiwan, the European Union, in this one, in grants, 96 million, but we are silent on the EU, because the EU pumps money into the business of the country in terms of development. So very few of them can get any kakada to go. What did you say, Honorable Member for Supreme? UWP induced unemployment. There's a false impression being created, Madam Speaker, that Taiwan is actually working the magic for us through some little contracts here, there, sometimes. I don't even see them. But under the former administration, we had the STEP program that impacted the lives of hundreds of St. Lucians in every constituency at the same time. Persons could have afforded working in STEP to build their homes. A number of poor people who occupied the lowest step on the ladder of social benefits for the first time could have gotten employment and build their homes and send their children to school. This United Workers Party government has come, destroyed the job. Huh? The chief among them is the member for Canary's Ancillary. Any malédiction. And Madam Speaker, I reach out for my tool. In Proverbs 22, verse 8, it says, those who plant seeds of injustice will harvest disaster, and their reign of terror will end. There is always a word when we see injustices in our society. After you dismiss and affected the lives of thousands of St. Lucians through the destruction of the STEP program, the people now go in and get a little credit, have their little cooler by the road trying to sell some drinks to send their kids to school. Suddenly, without notice, people are just taking away the same drinks that they are trying to sell to go and pay and the profits to send their children to school. Now, I am not in any way suggesting any lawlessness in this country. But I believe some mechanism needs to be found so that we are able to cushion the impact on poor people at this point in time. If there is one moment that poor people need transfers, it is during a recession. The elderly. So many people come to my home on a daily basis because things are just so challenging and so hard. Only recently, Madam Speaker, a lady came to me from Pum, and the lady has three breadfruit trees in her yard from Pum in Oje. And the lady told me, Madam Speaker, that some people came there and put pegs and said they're going to cut down her tree. And she explained to them that's what she depends on for an income. And they insisting that they're going to cut the lady's tree. Well, Madam Speaker, I do not have to repeat that malédiction is at hand. I am saying to the authorities, I will not prevent any development. I will not prevent any rationalization of land in the area. But at least we must do it with a social conscience. We cannot push people into deeper depth of security and poverty. And this is a contributing factor to the economic decline in the country over the past 3 years, Madam Speaker. Because when poor people and the unemployed do not have the financial resources to demand goods and services, consumption is not at its peak. And therefore, it will affect the business community and, by extension, the economy. Because it's important for the dynamism of the St. Lucian economy. When you take the caretakers program, where poor people are employed in that program, depending on the caretakers program as their sole form of livelihood, you come in, you wild with new liberty and drunk with power, you in charge, using the apparatus of government as a weapon against the poor people of this country. You take the jobs away from them and you give it to your friends who have jobs already. I heard a few of them boasting how when they get that money, they just bank it. While saving is good because it encourages investment, but consumption is important. Because poor people have the propensity to consume, when you place financial resources in their hands, they spend it. And that creates positive vibes for the economy of the country. Good, I see you writing. That's good, my honorable friend. Madam Speaker, closely related to the myth of Taiwan is assisting with unemployment is that mainland China did not engage in grassroots projects. But Madam Speaker, in the last quarter of 2006 alone, in the constituency of Labri, we resurfaced the multipurpose court. In Labri, the multipurpose court by the boys' school. We did it via the PRF. Or we playing bragged by the road from Mr. Q. We do things properly. A wall where we were constructing the playing field for the youth of Lahore. We utilize this through PRF. Erection of speed humps on the Viewport Super Highway in Labri. Now people can cross the road from the Labri village to go across, going up to Ban Lagwa. I'm coming for you in a while. Construction of a mega drain at Flamboyant Avenue, Labatui in Labri. And that's just a few of the projects, because time is against me, Madam Speaker. UWP induced inflation. You see, when the Labour Party was in office, it provided tax cuts for the workers of this country to give them greater disposable income. You know, that helped in restraining the growth of earnings. In comes our friend who promised to cut recurrent expenditure. And this is what the government did. They handled the fuel situation in a manner that actually fueled inflation of over 7% in the economy in 2008. Now, when you have inflation rates over 7% and you are negotiating with public servants, teachers and others, they will not demand interest rates increases that are below the inflation rate. You created an environment of uncertainty. You created a situation of flux. And the workers of this country must protect their interests. And so they demanded wage increases. A government that promised to cut down recurrent expenditure. So what you have done, you settle at 14.5% And look, another collective agreement is due now. And so negotiations will start very soon. Now, if you have an economy that is contracting, how can you move to stabilize the economy? Where is the stabilization? Because you stabilize an economy in an environment of reasonable growth rates and interest rates. Industrial policy that we could use to generate employment for the youth and people of this country. Where is the export development strategy which was prepared by the former government? In 2005, the Labour Party was at an advanced stage of introducing the export development strategy to revitalize and regenerate existing products and processes and generating new ones. What has happened to that? And then all you do is ball out about Wall Street, Meltdown Wall Street, and global shocks. Madam Speaker, the government, in the so-called environment that they speak of, how things are difficult and there are global challenges and we have to be prudent. But I don't understand what type of prudence that they embrace. Because when in that same environment, the situation is preventing you from constructing the Banff Road, but you can find $3 million to give to the Minister of Tourism to pummel ours at Bosseju and say boxing in paradise. You cannot build the Banff Road, but you can take $3 million trying to find the leader of the opposition guilty in some kind of commission of inquiry. Huh? Not even open heart surgery costs so much money. This free guy came here, with all due respect, come inside of here. I don't think they interview too many people. Write a report that you could have brought to Palace House, FNS, any one of them, and get $250. But $3 million was spent. You know, that reminds me of the story, Madam Speaker, of the Emperor's new clothes. Three guys one day came and said they're going to do a suit for the Emperor for weeks. They're preparing the suit. And one day, they had to put the new suit on the Emperor, brought the Emperor out in the balcony, and everybody saying that's a lovely suit. It took some kids. The brutal honesty to say that the Emperor was naked because there was no suit. But the free guy left with the money. A forensic audit is more deadly than a little commission of inquiry. You didn't find anything when you had your forensic audit. But you go in, you're looking for ways to send the leader of the opposition to body lay. That was one of the promises. But I will tell you, Madam Speaker, we all have to preoccupy and obsess with the leader of the opposition instead of doing your work. And you almost stop that. Because I have nothing personal with any member opposite. I enjoy cordial relations with members opposite, Madam Speaker. I just do not enjoy cordial relations with the budget. So, Madam Speaker, Madam Speaker, talking about wastage, the $45 million, was that an immediate need? Was that urgent? That $45 million to buy a building, I'm sure that could be constructed brand new to cost less than that. But anyway, I'm not going to enter that technical debate. But the point is, that $45 million could have been invested in our heritage tourism project in the Labri constituency to develop our various sites, providing employment during the construction phase and at the final phase, providing employment for the young people. You know Labri very well, Honorable Minister. But Madam Speaker, that is not just a thought that just emerged. On page 91 of the Labour Party's manifesto, you will see the plan for heritage tourism, and each constituency has their priorities there. we're moving into regional policy. That's what government has organized. And if we're there today, we would not have purchased that building. Global shops could have been there. But we'll be stimulating employment in the various constituencies in this country.
Honourable Member, you have 10 more minutes.
20 to 40 days and 40 nights. Madam Speaker, I beg to invoke Section 32.10 to ask an additional 30 minutes for the member to complete his presentation.
Honourable Member, the question is that standing order 32.10 be invoked to allow the Honourable Member Falabri to complete his presentation. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Member, proceed.
Thank you very much, colleagues. That is the spirit. Is it a new beginning? But anyway, thank you, Madam Speaker. Thank you, colleagues. Madam Speaker, the plans I speak of, I would like to indicate that despite being in opposition, I have started to assess the feasibility of setting in motion the various projects. And I'm very pleased to indicate to this Honorable House that I have two volunteers from Canada, two urban planners, who came to Labrie and did a complete assessment for me. And a report of this redevelopment plan for Labrie, that report would be received at the end of the month. Having completed that process, I will speak with all the stakeholders in the Labrie constituency, preparing for when the Labour Party returns in the government, so that we can set in motion those plans. Because drafts are people, Madam Speaker, when these people from the Heritage Tourism Program. So, Madam Speaker, as we speak, I am preparing a database of all young persons in my constituency. The central objective is to gain an insight into their needs, their priorities. For example, employment. Some of them may be marginally employed at this point in time, and of course, it's just a temporary form of employment. They're well qualified and they want to move on to bigger things. So at least it will inform the parliamentary representatives, and I will pass it on to the St. Lucia Labour Party, which is interested in getting the views, the ideas, the priorities of members of the various constituencies for inclusion in our national agenda. Madam Speaker, every time the United Workers Party is in government, they single out Labrie for special kind of treatment. We are punished despite how cordial we are with members of government. I do not recall any parliamentary representative for Labrie that ever assumed a posture of hostility where the United Workers Party was concerned. My predecessor, Mr. Vellon-John, conducted himself admirably in this Honorable House and all his dealings with the government. And during the period in opposition, he got very little. Despite writing, despite begging, Madam Speaker. Today in my constituency, I have articulated to the minister every single need as far as roads are concerned. He's there, he can tell you. And I'm a little disappointed that the Bunce Road has not been attended to, Madam Speaker. Because, you know, I feel when people come from St. Joe's, just had surgery, and to see those vehicles, not just up and down, there's breakdowns on the road. Even the dirty wind the vehicles doing on the road, Madam Speaker. Pregnant women and the elderly. You have persons who spent many years in England working hard, And they retire. They send sums of money to St. Lucia to build a home at the real estate, which is a growing housing area along the main Banks Road. And when the people come and see that disaster. So, whilst it is not my style to attack you, Honorable Minister for Communications and Works, I ask you to do something about that situation. And in the same breath, Madam Speaker, I would like to thank the Minister as well as the Prime Minister for giving us a soulagement on the Mont-Leblanc Road. I welcome it. Now, Madam Speaker, to really appreciate the magnitude of the neglect in Lagos, I just want to give this Honorable House an adumbrate of the projects that were undertaken by the former government. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in bringing water and electricity to areas that were deprived of those basic amenities for 30 years of bad-snabble rule. Our party erected an administrative building which cost in excess of $1.5 million. Our party spent in excess of $1 million constructing a playing field at Olibo. And that's the playing field that was missing $80,000 to be completed, that this government decided they're not going to complete the project. But with or without the government, this playing field will be completed, Madam Speaker. Our party spent in excess of $5 million in the first phase of rehabilitating the road infrastructure in the constituency, the Montpol Road, the Peoje, Laho, La Guance Ring Road, the Zebwa Road and Wavin Pont, Katen Road in Oje, the construction of the Pitibwa Bridge, the construction of a concrete road at Pitibuk, and the Old St. Jude's Road. Immediately after the election, phase two would have seen the rehabilitation of the following roads: the Banff Lane Road, the Mont-Leblanc Road, Lacroix Testone Highway, Martin Luther Street, Flamboyant Avenue, and the entire Lamar Road network. And I can go on and on listing roads that were undone. You know why, Madam Speaker? After that long list I gave you that Labour Party did, look at so many things that were left undone. The reason why it was left undone is because Labour left too many things for us to do in just 10 years. We couldn't catch up in 10 years the neglect of 30 years. Every single thing in Labour today was done by a Labour Party administration. The health center came under Clive Compton. And we can take our journey through the corridors of time. And I will show you. I challenge any one of you to name one project that Slambo has ever undertaken in the Labour constituency. So you know, the debate can only take place among Labourites as to what they believe were not done. But Slambo can't join that because Slambo has done nothing. We are eagerly awaiting. Madam Speaker, I want to briefly address myself to the issue of international relations. Madam Speaker, it is now very fitting to say that the whole world economy and the whole political order and the benefits which we inherited from them at our independence have been rapidly disappearing. Madam Speaker, a glaring example is our banana industry, where the British government and its European allies have been forced by the emerging countries of Latin America, aided by the United States, to abandon the arrangements under which the Windward Islands and St. Lucia in particular developed a major presence on the British market, which helped to bring extensive socio-economic development for our various communities. And extending this, Madam Speaker, the EU in the new era of the Economic Partnership Agreement appears to be inclined to the larger Caribbean countries as against our own. We have been forced to realize too, Madam Speaker, that the power of the lobbies in the United States negates our best efforts as we try to protect what we have and advance new mechanisms for the advancement in international trade, particularly in the new sphere of financial and related services. These, Madam Speaker, are not circumstances about which we can sit and complain. They are among the inevitabilities of changing global circumstances. Our responsibility is to find the ways at home and in our external relations to plot paths of responses with consistency based on the development of consensus at home. And this, Madam Speaker, is where this government seems to be failing. Recall to begin with that this government, on its attainment of office, gave to the world a clear indication that instead of facing the new global realities with new perspectives, instead of the old ones, which they had when they left office in 1997, they preferred to attempt, like Sisyphus, to try to roll back the wave. An abundant diplomatic recognition of the number one emerging economy in today's world, the People's Republic of China. Madam Speaker, we on this side of the House know that they will continue to boast about the benefits and the largesse coming out of that fatal decision. But Madam Speaker, contrary to what they believe, with their false notions of what a sovereign country can do and cannot do, they have been closely watched by those beyond our shores, looking to see how far they will go with their boasting of having expelled one of today's most important members of the United Nations Security Council from our shores. They have frittered away much goodwill which our country had gained. Madam Speaker, one would have thought that a new government coming into office after the momentous global changes taking place since the last sat where they are sitting would have encouraged our country to have a discussion on how we should adapt our foreign policy to new circumstances as the Labour Party government has begun to do. But nothing of that. So we operate today in an ad hoc vacuum. What has been the consequence over these last nearly 4 years for our external relations, Madam Speaker? St. Lucia, one, the leading voice for the OECS in regional relations, is now a silent partner. We seem to have no position on the progress or lack of progress of the CARICOM single market and economy. You can bet that this government is going to wait until actions are taken elsewhere in the Caribbean community that are negative to the freedom of movement and migration of our people before they begin to wail, Madam Speaker. St. Lucia, which for so long the guardian of OECS interest in the LEAD joint venture, says nothing productive about alternative arrangements on airlines, which is critical to our people's business and for tourists coming to us from within the Caribbean. All we hear is obviously self-interested denunciation of LEAD with no suggestion for changes or improvements, but continual pronouncements about new airlines, as if that would be the result of any government initiative. We see nothing emanating from this government by way of air transportation diplomacy. All we hear is a minister shouting around the region about what he doesn't like and what he likes. Air transportation diplomacy, Madam Speaker, is a significant activity of emerging global relations. Madam Speaker, the voice of St. Lucia, so prominent in all international negotiations relating to the banana industry, is now silent. A silence which this government justifies by saying that the industry is privatized and must look after itself. Look after itself until a crisis comes across. As you can see today with Black Tiger Toka, they proceed to get all hot and sweaty. Isn't the tourism industry privatized, Madam Speaker? Yes. But don't you hear them shooting up them up about tourism every other morning? No consistency, Madam Speaker. No acknowledgement that the different sections and economic interests of our population must be given equal priority. Madam Speaker, in today's world, national security is a significant element of our external relations. It is no longer a home affairs matter. In that connection, the opposition is deeply concerned about increasing perception of St. Lucia as a place of scandal, with a government unwilling to fulfill its obligations in respect of the security obligations of the international community. The British visa decision is a direct consequence of the Ministry of National Security's laissez-faire attitude to other governments' requests for conformity with recognized rules and practices. You know why, Madam Speaker? Because the preservation of personal political power or the jockeying for political power means more to some than the business of the country. As I prepare, I'm on final approach as I prepare to land, Madam Speaker. I must say that we are fast approaching another general election. And the St. Lucia Labour Party will have the responsibility to evolve new forms of social institutions, new economic instruments to repair the social and economic damage to the economic fabric of our country. We need to urgently improve macroeconomic stability, improve the investment climate for private sector-driven growth, and enhance the quality and effectiveness of human resources and enable knowledge-based growth, Madam Speaker. Key economic objectives again for this opposition when in government is going to be job creation, poverty alleviation, reduction of inequality, and the overall growth of wealth of the country. In this regard, Madam Speaker, to deal with the social and economic challenges for the next decade, we need competent men and women, persons who are imbued with burning nationalism, to take control of the levers of power. And Madam Speaker, it is no longer a situation about it is our turn that this United Workers Party administration oppress and victimize our people. And when I spoke about victimization, I said if the government victimizes the working class, there'll be neither peace nor rest in this land, and the very foundation of this land shall be shaken. You know what happened? They tried to paint me as a big bad wolf. But I'll say to you, Madam Speaker, I will never retreat from that position. Love is always going to be my regulating ideal. Over the years in the Labi constituency, I've seen many families being destroyed when UWP was in power for 40 years, where a husband was victimized, no job, no money flowing into the house, and then of course, as if no money, no love, his family disappeared. And as a little boy growing up in Labri, cooked and baked in the Labri culture, I can say that we are veterans of creative suffering. We did not cry. We built institutions like the Labri Cooperative Credit Union, which is the key to our economic salvation. And I'll tell you, our turn will never come to victimize anybody. Because if that is the posture assumed, all my words and all my protests against the victimization would end up as a meaningless drama on the stage of history, shrouded in the ugly garments of shame, Madam Speaker. But this Labour government has listened in opposition in new ways to the voices of quiet anguish, to the voices of the heart, to the anxious voices. We have listened in new ways, and we have made certain adjustments. Every government, when in office, will experience drift from time to time. Of course, just like an aircraft would experience drift, of course. An opposition gave us an opportunity to reflect more and to ascertain our true position. And as an aviation man, we have set our bearings, and we are about to take off and navigate the turbulent times safely and effectively, Madam Speaker. So, Madam Speaker, the areas that I alluded to earlier, if implemented, would help unlock faster movement in all areas. It would be a catalyst towards ascending to a higher plane of development. However, in pursuing these objectives, St. Lucia will be challenged to find the appropriate balance between leadership and collective effort. It is undoubtedly within the sphere of competence of the SLP to take this country to a higher plane of development. Because while we come from different backgrounds, we distill from our differences strength, not weakness, hope, not despair. And so we shall distill from our differences strong programs of national action. Madam Speaker, St. Lucia, the Labour Party is ready to govern again. Prepare for elections, my brothers and sisters. Thank you, Madam Speaker.